A chance to talk some hockey right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com. I'm Fox 2 Sports Director Martin Kilcoyne. This week, Pucks with Bernie and Panger featuring Darren Pang. Our weekly visits are presented by Marie Davila, Senior Living, Triad Bank, Fast Eddie's Bon Air, Urban Chestnut Brewery, Cope 24, Greenville University, and B&G Tuck Pointing. This week, we'll talk about the Blues shaking up that top line. Also, the standings get a little tight in the Central Division. We'll break it down with Panger. Plus, he takes us back to that night in Anaheim. He was on the broadcast. He was on the bench when Jay Bouwmeester had his cardiac episode. Panger sharing those thoughts with us. We'll talk some hockey. We'll get into all of that with Darren Pang. Winning a Stanley Cup isn't easy, but the Blues are able to do it by having a great foundation. It's pretty simple. When things start falling apart or crumbling, it not only looks bad, it doesn't work. B&G Tuck Pointing has the same philosophy about your home or place of business. It's the reason. They are the best in the bricks. Whether it's your home, your garage, your office building, or your chimney, you can have it looking new again with B&G Tuck Pointing. Solid or spot tuck pointing, matching the existing mortar, foundation repair, caulking, waterproofing, fully licensed and insured, accredited by the Better Business Bureau. I know firsthand the finished product is great, and the crews, well, they're efficient and they never leave behind a mess. B&G Tuck Pointing, a family business right down to their name, named after owner Rich Galati's daughters, Bella and Gabrielle. You can call to set up an estimate at 314-363-0525. That's 314-363-0525, or go online at bgtuckpointing.com, bgtuckpointing.com. Find out for yourself why their customers say they are the best in the bricks. Rich and his daughters would like to add one more thing. Let's go Blues. I'm here with Renee Howitt. She started up a great organization called Cope 24. Their goal is to improve the health of families. Renee, tell us how Cope 24 strives to do this.
Well, we believe education is going to be the key. So we are promoting the need to make parenting and child development education a priority in all of our high schools, reaching all of our students.
You know, it's funny you say high school and curriculum. I think of math. I think of English. Cope 24 believes that parenting needs to be one of those core classes taken. Why is that so important?
Well, we look at the issues that we have in our society. Child welfare is just overwhelmed with the number of kids that need healthy families. We look at crime, imprisonment, mental health, domestic violence. It just goes on and on. And we know, without a doubt, that we can trace that back to dysfunctional families. So if we want our families to be healthier, we have to create healthier parents.
For more information on this great organization, simply go to cope24.com. That's cope, C-O-P-E, 24.com, teaching the kids of today to be the better parents of tomorrow. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution. And with that, we bring in the great Darren Pang. Can I call you the great Darren?
No, you can't. There's only one great one.
There's only one.
Yeah, I hate to name drop because Robert De Niro told me never to name drop, but it's Gretz.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Wayne Douglas Gretzky.
Okay. The sometimes great Darren Pang. The birthday boy. How did you celebrate?
Oh, yeah.
I celebrated the best way I possibly could. Had a day that we had a carpet guy came in early in the morning. I had to move a lot of stuff around to make sure that that was done right and try to help out my wife at least a little bit because she does all the work in the house.
This sounds really special already.
So far, you liking this so far? But then I got to go and be with my my granddaughter, little Charlie, for several hours. Went for lunch. And the Clove and the Bee, or the Bee and the Clove, or something like that. You know, that place right beside Olive and Oak?
Yeah.
Yeah, so great spot. And then went home, got a little rest, had to have a little nap. And then I went out to dinner, and we went to Katie's Pizza, and brought it again back to my daughter's place, where I could, again, spend a little time with my little granddaughter, Charlie. See, that's kind of where we're at right now, at 56 years of age. So, well, and a couple of glasses of red wine.
You don't look a day over, I'd say, about 52.
That, I was thinking 48.
All right. Well, happy birthday, everybody. I'm sure you'll get a fine salute from the fans. And changes are in the air. The Blues have been losing, there's no doubt. A lot of close games, too. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Craig Berube's role. Because as a coach, you can't hit a panic button. The players know it. Yeah. Well, you start tweaking lines. Maybe they even say, you know what, let's try something new. How does a coach balance that?
I think it's a tough balancing act, and especially on the heels of everything that happened with Jay Bouwmeester. And, you know, the players finding out that Jay was good that night, that made them feel better. You still have the next day. You've got the next day. I mean, there were still some emotions that went on there. So I think there's maybe a little, I'm not going to say, it's hard to say this with Chief, nurturing, but, you know, a little bit more, you know, let's go, boys. Let's maybe a little bit more pats on the back and a little bit more give them confidence that way. And I thought their last two games were really, really good. I love the game here. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And you know what? I think that emotional tribute to Jay caught the players a little off guard. You know, I think they knew that something was going on. But as you're watching it, I'm watching the bench because I'm between the benches, and I'm seeing some emotion. And when you see that, you're like, whoa, how is this game going to start? Is it going to start on fire? Is it going to start where you're just going to be a bat out of hell and everybody's going to be hitting everybody? Or is it going to be slow? And it was slow. And I thought Nashville was unbelievable in that first part. So I give the Blues credit for finding a way to get that sandpaper back. And I like using that, and I think we've talked about that. You know, what John McEnroe used to do in his career, when he wasn't playing well, he yelled at the referee, broke a racket. He did something to get himself negative to positive. And I think the Blues did that. They manufactured energy. And Braden Schenn doesn't just fight somebody to fight somebody. He fights somebody good to make a difference. He fought, remember Gabriel Landeskog at center ice years ago when the Blues were really struggling. So that's a top player on Colorado. He fights Philip Forsberg, a top player on Nashville. And I thought that got everybody going as well. And he knows how to get a fight. He started that fight. And he forced Forsberg to fight. And then obviously Bortuzzo knew that they were going to get him back after the suspension he took on Arvidsson. So then that fight happened. So I think they manufactured something really good in that game. And then I thought they played a heck of a game Sunday in Nashville. I mean, let's face it, that should have gone to overtime. They got to find a way to get those points back.
I think the shocking thing isn't the losing that's been going on, but the fact they still have a piece of the division lead. I mean, it speaks to the pad that they had.
Yeah.
Braden Schenn said it's a little humbling right now when you look at the standings, but basically now it's on. Last quarter of the season, Dallas isn't going anywhere. Colorado's not going anywhere. It should be a hell of a lot of fun.
Pretty good spot to be in, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you had that kind of pad that you could lose 10 of 12, and you're still on top.
I kept looking at the standings, and I'm like, still in first? Still in first? Still in first? I mean, you went 11 straight games giving up three or more goals against. You probably don't deserve to be in first, but they built up such a pad, and no one had traction. So I give them all the credit in the world. And now, you're right, now it's game on. Now there's teams that are below that are only 5, 6, 7 points behind. They were at one point 15 points behind. So these are all, I think these are all good things for them. I think this gets their attention, and it's at the right time of the season to turn this thing around and get the better goaltending that they need, get the better defending that they need, and no more excuses.
And you look up some of the nights, the big goals allowed, and then you look, well, they're power play goals. Where are you in terms of Jordan Binnington's play?
I'm okay with some games. I mean, I think I try to evaluate it on a game basis, not an overall basis. He played great on Sunday. I thought he made some really good saves. I thought he played really well against Vegas in a 6-5 loss. I can't tell you how many grade A chances that he made, and I like that he had the battle in that game, that he didn't go away in that game. So those are some of the things that I try to separate from the overall totals. I try to look at where are his legs on the crease, where's his movement, where's his concentration, what kind of goals are going in. Short side goal from a distance, not a good goal. Deep in your net, that wouldn't be a good goal for him. But you know, if you're on top of your crease and you're playing the Colorado Avalanche and they're going dot to dot and they're beating you, those are tough plays. More quality shots against them. But you know, I always remember last year too, Martin, that he came on board at a time where they desperately needed points. They had a lot of optional skates. He exercised his optional. He didn't go on the ice an awful lot, and he was fresh for games. Well, now you're a number one goaltender. Your salary's been bumped up. You're looked to against all the other team's best games, and you have to be on the ice all the time. So I think this has been a real learning curve for him as well in terms of not load management like the NBA, but you've got to stay strong to be a number one goaltender in the league.
The 52 shots was obscene the one night, but as a goaltender, they like to see some action, don't they? I mean, what is there a perfect number of shots? I mean, if I said one or two, they'd say, well, that was kind of boring.
Yeah, well, you know, one or two, like Marty Brodeur is in the building tonight. Marty, for whatever reason. He's the great Marty Brodeur. Yeah. For whatever reason, he was able to, I don't know how he could focus when he didn't have very many shots. And then he'd make a save that was unbelievable. Kind of like Ken Dryden, who was the very best at that with the Montreal Canadiens. And Marty had that same ability. And then there's some guys that they need to have action all the time. So what's the ideal? For me, my ideal start to a game was about 15 to 17 shots to start the game. Got right into it. Like, for example, Sunday afternoon in Nashville. You know, Pekka Rinne has not been playing very well. He's been watching UC Saros win five of the last six games and take over the number one spot. So what did we do? We fired a lot of shots on him that there was no traffic in front. And he caught pucks. He saw pucks. I thought we allowed him to get right into the game. And he was terrific, no question. He was the difference in the game. But to start the game, he had all these shots from the outside, and we didn't have enough traffic. We didn't make him busy enough in that net for me early. We did later on, but we didn't do it early on. So that's the ideal thing for me. 15 shots from about the face-off dot and catch them, play them, and get them in the belly. That would be ideal for me.
We alluded to the new line. Now you have O'Reilly with Schwartz and Shen. I mean, that's a really skilled line. Mm-hmm. And I know O'Reilly and Perron have had a lot of chemistry. Do you think there's a spark there, maybe putting those three together? Do you see the logic?
I do. I see it a lot. I do believe, watching the games, that that Ryan O'Reilly and David Perron had gotten a little stale. And I talked to Ryan O'Reilly about that this morning. And it's not that they're not trying. It's not that they're not making plays. But the other team looks at O'Reilly and David Perron as the top two, the wing and the centerman, that are creating the most amount of points. They watch video after video after video, the clip after clip after clip of what they do. At one point, it gets stale. And that's just the fact of the matter. I mean, I've bit into some Cheerios every once in a while. They're stale. I throw them in the garbage. And I think that's what's going on right now. And you have to get another spark. I think Ryan O'Reilly needs another spark. I think David Perron needs a spark, and he's going to get it with Robert Thomas and Zach Sanford. So that's the good news, because I think Thomas has played well. Sanford's playing well. I think Schwartz has played well. Last two games, I've liked Shen's game. Sundqvist comes back to the lineup. I like that. I think Jordan Kyrou's played well lately, and playing with the young guys there the last game, I thought they were on fire. I was excited to watch them play. So I think all in all, there's a good combination, and Oscar Sundqvist back in the lineup.
What's clicked for Sanford? I mean, we see him. He's a big kid. Yep. We know that. And in the past, I think Army and Berube have said, if he's physical, he plays. Now he's got the scoring touch going. What's changed?
I think something that Chief said to him. I think early in the year, the preparation of some of the young players wasn't good enough. And I was relayed a story, which I thought was a terrific story, because Chief has said it, and the players had said it to me. And I said, what do you need to get the young guys going? He said, well, I told them that they've got to, whatever you're doing to prepare for games. And then the young players are like, well, we do this, we do that. And he goes, no, you're not listening. Whatever you do to prepare for games, change it, because it's not good enough. So whatever you're doing the night before a game, it's not good enough. Whatever you're doing the day of the game, it's not good enough. Prepare better, like a pro. Get ready to play. Get ready to start the game on time. And I've noticed, I mean, Sanford for sure, Vince Dunn for sure, Jordan Kyrou for sure. And I think whatever was said between the young players and Chief, I think it hit the mark. And I think that's what's necessary. And this is the reason why we talk so highly and glowingly of our older players. It's their preparation. It's what they do to get ready for games. They don't come into a game ill-prepared or lacking intensity for the first face-off, they're ready to go. But if you've got some young players that aren't ready to go, it drags everybody down. And so it's easy to get ready for the playoffs. It's the playoffs. You're playing the same team maybe seven times. It's everything's on the line, the crowd, and everybody's watching you. But it's the regular season that you have to learn how to be professionals and be prepared.
It's Pucks with Bernie and Panger, talking it over with the Blues analyst Darren Pang.
Our visit's presented by Fast Eddie's Bon Air. You've heard all about it up there in Alton, Illinois. If you haven't been, what are you waiting for? And if you haven't been in a while, you need to get back, because it's a mood changer. You hear our visits with Eddie. He's always in a good mood. You've heard Brett talking about it, Brett Hull. You go into Fast Eddie's, if you're in a bad mood, you're going to leave in a good mood. Open 7 days a week. It's 11 a.m. Doors open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The rest of the days, they open at 1, and there are people lined up. The grill's already fired up. Get the Fat Eddie burger, half-pound burger. Live music 7 days a week. It's always a good time at Fast Eddie's. Really not that far to get to. Make it a destination. Maybe it's a bachelorette party or a bachelor party. Got the whole bus. They got a huge parking lot. They can accommodate. They're used to that. Birthday parties. Very rare that you just see a small group in there. People roll in, maybe a group from work. Always a good time at Fast Eddie's, Bon Air, the tradition continues in Alton, Illinois. Our hockey visits are brought to you by Triad Bank, neighborhood-friendly bank. Folks who are happy to see you walk in. Doesn't it stink when you go to a bank and they're sort of rude when you walk in there? It's your money. You would think they could be a little bit friendlier. They're always friendly, happy to help at Triad Bank. They're located on Clayton Road. It's about a block west of Lindbergh. Real easy to get to from Highway 40. You get off the 64 Farty exit there at Lindbergh. And just going a little bit west on Clayton Road, you'll find Triad Bank, based in St. Louis since 2005. So if you're looking to get something done here in town, ask for Jim Regna or anybody on the team there. I guarantee they'll be happy to see you. I like to go in there. I just steal the pen sometimes. They've got great pens. How many banks can tell you that? They got a great pen. But beyond that, great service. It's triadbanking.com. Also presented by Urban Chestnut. You know about their location in the Grove. They've really become the anchor to all the activity in the Grove. Urban Chestnut, great St. Louis success story. Think about it. With all the beers that are popular, I really love the Zwickel, and now I'm getting hooked on the Urban Underdog. Whatever taste you have, they've got a beer for you. Urban Chestnut, not just the locations in town, but also in your neighborhood grocery store. You can pick it up, make Urban Chestnut part of your Blues viewing fun. Grab a beer there. We've mentioned before, you can get Urban Chestnut at the Zoo. They're all over St. Louis, but make sure you grab them and have them at home as you're sitting back and watching some Blues hockey. Also, Marie Davila Senior Living. MarieDavila.com is the website. We suggest you set up a tour. Check out the villas, some of the assisted living. We've talked about Red Shadings for years, being a not just a longtime resident there, but one of the people who helped get that started and was part of the ownership group. But right now, Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan, just festive, fun people. You see the fountain when you drive by Clayton Road, right at the intersection near Queenie Park. It's Clayton and Weidman. During the Cardinal playoff runs, you see the red fountains. During the Blues run, you see the blue fountain going outside. Always a huge Christmas tree. They're just fun, festive people, and a really great place for your senior years. Set up that appointment at MarieDavila.com.
Jay Bouwmeester back around the team. A lot of players commented on it, what it meant to see him, just to be around the rink. I think for people who don't follow the league closely, they may not have understood how well-regarded he was. And you're seeing it now around the league with the reaction and the responses. Give people a sense of his status in the NHL.
You have no idea. It is amazing that people have no idea. Jay's so quiet, but being quiet doesn't mean that he doesn't know what to say and when to say it. And when he does say something, he says it, and he's like E.F. Hutton. Everybody just listens. Everybody just shuts up. There's been a couple of situations in that locker room where the coach had come in and told everybody to sit down after a game, sit down and stay in your stalls. And when the media comes in, you answer the questions. And the minute that the coach left, and I think it was Mike Gill at that time, three or four guys left, went to hide in the medical room, and Jay Bouwmeester got up and yelled, and he yelled, and everybody went back and sat down. And it's just another small example of Jay. But I've been between the benches now since the situation, the cardiac episode in Anaheim. So Anaheim, then we had the next games. So that's three more games, because the two against Nashville. And in particular, the game here against Nashville at home, I had four of their players come to me between the benches to ask how Jay was. You know, like, it's across the red line. You're not supposed to go across the red line in the warm-up. Kind of give me a stick tap, because I was looking the other way and just saying, hey, how's Jay? And they've reached out to the players, of course, but everybody was very concerned. And he's an icon in our game is someone that's, you know, got a little bit more pizzazz, but quietly he's become that, and I think he's revered because of the way he plays the game, the honor that he plays the game. He's a fair player, and he's the longevity and the championships that he's won. I mean, every time you turn around, he's got a gold medal from somewhere in Canada, and then he turns around and he's got a Stanley Cup for the St. Louis Blues. So I think that's probably why.
You've been a broadcaster a long time. Ever had a night that challenging, that Tuesday in Anaheim? Anything that, I know you've been emotional talking about it since, anything that compares, anything that, I know nothing prepares you for that. What you can, I guess, take us through that and how you handled it, how you got through it, because you're a friend of his, and then you're also a broadcaster. And it's like, hey, keep talking, but well, wait a minute, maybe I don't want to talk.
Yeah, well, and the other part is I'm an emotional guy as it is anyway, so that doesn't make it any easier. So it was hard, but I know Tim Papps and our group, Phil Mollica is our director, Julie Freeze, our graphics coordinator, And I think all in all, everybody did a great job. But we go through these seminars, and they show us the clips of Rich Peverly. They show us the clips of what Detroit did with Uri Fisher. And because of their situations, the defibrillators, you know, that close to the bench. Because of that, they went from one doctor to two to three doctors have to be in attendance, and they have to be further than, let's call it, six rows from the bench and have immediate access to the bench. Because of those previous situations, we have Bo's situation. Because of Ray Barilli and because of the medical staff on both sides, they revived Jay Bouwmeester. So I could see more than I said. I didn't say his name for a while. I knew who it was. I saw that Julie, her name's Julie Free, she put the graphic didn't say who it was. She said, Blues player down on bench. And I think that was a really smart thing for her to put there, so that, you know, until Doug Armstrong did know he was watching the game, because he told me this. At one point, you know, I did mention Jay Bouwmeester, and he was on the phone immediately when he counted the bench and he found out. He was on the phone with Devin, his wife. So right away, everything goes into not proper protocol, but the right thing to do. So because he was watching far and wide and no close-ups and nobody, you know, guessing at what was going on, he knew right away what happened. He knew it wasn't a puck that hit somebody. He knew it wasn't a trainer. He knew it when the player was down, and you could actually see on the wide shot what the doctors were doing and pressing on his chest and with the defibrillator and everything. So, but the key for me as a broadcaster is not saying too much, because I might be wrong. And then I was able to go down to the hallway, and Bob Murray is the general manager of Anaheim, and he was on the phone two steps from me with Gary Bettman. So I was able to take his information right away. The referee was there, our players were there, their coach was there, our coach was there, and he literally says, Gary, we're not playing this game. So now I'm able to go back and relay that information. So there was a lot of good information that we were able to kind of put out there, including saying that his eyes were open, he was responsive. And that's all I had, and that's all I could say. I couldn't say his arms were moving, because I didn't know that. I just knew that his eyes were open and he was responsive. And so to relay that, I think, helped out as well.
I think there was a period, I don't know if it was 10 seconds, 30 seconds, where you and JK didn't say a word, no. And it was appropriate.
It seemed like it was 40 seconds. It seemed like it was 30
And it's weird seconds. In your world for that to happen, yeah. But it was the right thing to do, because yeah. There's nothing you can say.
No, because you'd say something wrong, too. Like, you just don't know what you're going to say. You're emotional. You're watching people. Like, I literally watched Ryan Getzlaff and Colton Parayko grab the bench and pull it off of the bench. Like, you go to that bench and go take a look at Martin. You're a big, strong guy. Go take a look at that bench. I saw them pull it off. It was like dumb strength. And it was amazing. I saw Steve Ott, because I'm between the benches and the glass, I saw Steve Ott's eyes, and I'll never forget them, banging on the glass, yelling for their trainer. So there's glass between me and Steve Ott, and then there's glass between Brian Hayward was on between the benches for them, and then their trainer's eyes, and then the doctor coming down. I remember he had an orange tie. You remember the things that immediately, you know, and the trainer's there, and then the doctor there. It was just so immediate, and everybody just responded like unbelievable, like world class, calm under fire, I guess the best way to describe it.
And how did you get through that night? Are you once you hear, I guess, that the players and Petro went there, that helped.
Yes, it did.
But are you replaying everything in your head? Yeah. How do you get that out of your head?
I wrote it. I wrote everything down in my book just to have that memory. But we went back to a different hotel because we didn't have a hotel. But as we were going into the it was the Ritz-Carlton Laguna Beach, beautiful by the way. We saw the players outside the bus, and we saw them FaceTiming. So when they were coming in, we were already sitting at the bar because we couldn't get into our room yet. So we ordered up some food, because normally we'd be in Vegas by that time or close to it, because we were going to travel right after the game. And once we saw the players come down the lobby, and we asked them, they're like, we really felt a great sense of relief to know that, okay, like Jay's acting like he sprained his ankle. Like, hey, what do you mean you stopped the game? You know, like that's kind of him. And so then I sent him a text thinking, well, I'll just send him a text for encouragement, and he'll get back to me in a week or something. And he responded 3 minutes later. And it was like, hey, Panger, you know, no, it's all good. We're just trying to figure out what's going on. I'm like, wow. Like, so many emotions, but yet there's so much clarity when you know, whether it's a text, whether it's a, you know, the players FaceTiming. Yesterday after the game, I got from Alexander Steen. He showed me a picture of Jay with his family when he arrived home, and he was in the living room and he was playing with his kids. So I think those are calm things.
Well, for what it's worth, you, John Kelly, the crew, I think handled it as well as you could. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, my pleasure, Martin. Thank you. They did a great job. Appreciate it.
Truly appreciate Darren Pang sharing those thoughts with us that night in Anaheim on the broadcast. Darren Pang, John Kelly, the entire Fox Sports Midwest crew really did a terrific job under difficult circumstances. Thanks for tuning in. As always, the Hockey Conversation here is presented by Greenville University, Triad Bank, Marie Davila Senior Living, Urban Chestnut Brewery, Fast Eddie's Bonaire, B&G Tuck Pointing, and Cope 24. I'm Martin Kilcoin. We'll talk to you later this week with Big Walt.